Good morning. I hope you have a Bible with you, and if you do, be turning to John chapter 13. John 13, we're going to be there in a few minutes. We'll look at several passages this morning. But before we get there, I just want to talk a little, if that's okay. First, I want to say Happy Mother's Day to all of our moms and grandmas in attendance. I hope you feel loved and cherished today, but not just today. I hope you feel loved and cherished every day because you are essential to our families and very much appreciated. But on that topic of Mother's Day, having never been a full-time preacher before, I wasn't sure what are you supposed to do as a preacher on Mother's Day? And I'll be honest with you, I struggle with the idea or the concept of a Mother's Day sermon. Who am I to say anything to a mom or a mother about what they should do as a mother? I mean, clearly Scripture has things to say that we can apply as mothers, fathers, children, brothers, sisters, whatever. But it still is a strange feeling situation for me. Another reason why I struggle with it a little bit is because I understand that not everybody has great feelings about Mother's Day. Maybe it's because you had a bad experience with your own mother, or maybe it's because you've lost your mother. This coming September will be 8 years since I lost my mom, and so while today is a day where I celebrate my wife, the mother of my children, I also greatly miss my own mom. This first thing this morning, I got up, and as iPhones tend to do, it said, "Hey, you have a memory from today," and I pulled it up, and it was a picture of my mom holding Kate when she was probably 2 years old. And while there was joy at seeing that picture, there was also sadness mixed in with that. And so again, there's a mixture of emotions. So I struggle with the idea. And so my thought on Monday morning was, I'm just going to keep chugging in James. But there was this thing that kept gnawing at me this week. And what it was a lesson that I learned from my mom. Again, she's been gone for a while, but it was something that I learned from her when I was a teenager. And I wrote about this in the bulletin. So if you've already read the bulletin article, you can probably take a nap and be fine. There's no blanks. There's nothing to fill out. There's not going to be any fancy outline. It all begin with the same letter. I'm just going to talk to you, and we'll make application from Scripture that I hope that you'll find that this is based in Scripture. But the lesson that I learned from my mom, I learned when I was a teenager. And it is a lesson that I learned from a situation where I hurt her. I caused her pain. And so it's not the most pleasant thing to recall, but at the same time, the lesson I learned is one that I don't think I will ever forget. Now, before you think, well, hey, he's about to tell some story about the time he got thrown in prison or what. No, I was a good kid. It's not that kind of hurt. I was a good kid. I was a rule follower. But this was a situation where I caused her pain. And let me set it up this way. When I was a teenager, and so this event happened, I was probably 16, 17 years old. And when I was that age, my mom and I were best friends. My perception is that a lot of kids, when they're that age, they're trying to assert their independence and they're trying to put as much space between themselves and their parents as they possibly can. I've never seen that with Kate. I'm already seeing it with Sarah, and she's just 12. Matter of fact, on the field trip to St. Louis that I took a few weeks ago, there was a situation that happened where it was clear that Sarah did not want to hang out with me. And one of the teachers said, "Hey," who has small children, said, "Hey, when does that start happening?" And I said, "Well, apparently, like right now. It's happening right now." But anyway, but we were best friends. I mean, we hung out together. We bowled together. We water skied together. We went on walks together. We even went on vacations, just the two of us together. One of my first memories of going on a long, of me driving long distance was I think I had just turned 16, and the two of us went to Gulf Shores, which I think is where Dave and Wanda are. We went to Gulf Shores, and she let me drive the whole way. And I remember that, just the two of us going on this beach trip. So anyway, all I had to say is we were very close. Well, it was during graduation season, so season we're in right now. It was in graduation season, and she had purchased a graduation present for someone that I did not know. And she was incredibly busy one day, and she asked me if I would take the graduation present to their house. Now, I didn't know these folks, didn't know them at all. And another piece of this story was that as a teenager, I was painfully shy. I mean, really, really shy. And that person is still inside of me today. I just fight through it. I hope that I haven't come across as one that doesn't like to talk to people, but I struggle with, you know, that being put in situations where, you know, having to carry on conversations. My theory on one reason why I have so much trouble with people's names is because when I go into social interactions, my goal is get in, don't make a fool of myself, get out. And I'm not thinking about, oh, I need to remember their name. I'm just thinking, don't look like an idiot, okay? And so, all that being said, I was painfully shy. So when she asked me to do that, I was thinking, I can't do that. I can't go over to their house, walk up, knock on the door of complete strangers, and even have like a 1 minute I can't do it. I cannot do this. And so after negotiation, I essentially refused. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing it. And so she rearranged her day so that she could be the one to take it. And when she came back, I ran into her in the utility room in our house, and she was crying. And we had a conversation, and she was hurt by the fact that I had refused to do this. That she had asked me, and I had said no. And I tried to explain, like, look, I'm so shy. I'm thinking now, this wasn't a rational fear, but it was a real fear. I didn't want to do it. And she said something to me. This is what stuck with me. She said, loving someone means doing something for them even when you don't want to. And that, I mean, stabbed me in the heart. And I can still picture her in that room. I can picture her saying that to me. But while those words came from her and the lesson I learned from her, the lesson did not originate with her. And the reason why I ask you to turn to John 13 is because Jesus, at the end of what we know of as John 13, is talking to his disciples about a new commandment. And this new commandment is, in essence, what my mom taught me that day. And I'll go on to say, is the definition of what we know. We may not know many Greek words, but we probably know the word agape, which I have up on the screen. That is the essence of what agape, or sacrificial love, is all about. Now, before I go any further, and just in a second we're going to jump into John, I want to give a little aside, okay? Because this phrase of, you know, if you love me, you'll do it even if you don't want to. That is a phrase that could be used by some to try to get you to do something that is immoral, that is impure. That is not only not clearly what this lesson is about, it is also never let someone try to convince you to do something that is immoral or impure under the guise of, if you love me, you will do this. Okay? Again, that's not what this lesson is about, and is also not something that, please don't ever give in to that line of thinking. Okay, there's a clear distinction between what my mom was teaching me and the idea of trying to get someone to do something that they should not do. So I hope you can see that distinction. I even put a disclaimer in the bulletin with a box around it. So I just want to make that clear. But go with me to John 13. To John 13, and I want to go down to verse 34. Now, to set the context, John 13, Jesus is in the upper room with his disciples, those men that are going to be his apostles, minus Judas, who in the middle of chapter 13 leaves because he has been identified as the betrayer. But in the first part of John 13, we have the disciples coming into the upper room that has been prepared earlier. Jesus had asked them to prepare it for the Passover. And then the first thing that happens is Jesus washes their feet. And I not only do I tell you that to set the context, but Lord willing, tonight's sermon is going to come from that encounter. I decided let's just make it a John 13 Palooza today. We'll just do it all from John 13. So tonight we're going to talk about this interaction between Jesus and Peter over foot washing. But coming after that, after Jesus gives this incredible example of a servant's attitude, he then goes on to identify Judas as the betrayer. And then we have this statement coming on the heels again of Jesus giving this example of being a servant. He says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another." Okay? Well, how is that new? Well, here's how it's new. He says, "Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." So it's kind of like the bookends say, you have to love one another. But in the middle, he says, the standard of love that you show toward each other is to the degree that I have loved you, that is the love you are to show to someone else. And then he says, that's how people will know that you're my disciples. So he says, you take the love that I have shown you, and you reflect that to those that are around you. Okay? That's what Jesus says is the new commandment. Now, if you've got a Bible, flip over to Ephesians chapter 4. This exact same thought is echoed by Paul in the first couple of verses of Ephesians 5, but I want to go back to Ephesians 4 to set this up, because again, context matters. But this exact same thing is set up by Paul. And to summarize kind of the last part of Ephesians 4, Paul is using a word picture illustration, if you will, where he's talking about old life and new life. And the metaphor or illustration that he gives to describe old life versus new life is you're taking off the old self, like you would take off an article of clothing. And then you are putting on the new self like you would put on an article of clothing, like you would change clothes. That's the metaphor. And then he goes on after talking about putting off the old self, putting on the new self, which is in verse 22 and 24, to say that this old self versus new self, we'll see that in our actions. And all the illustrations he gives are in the way which we interact with each other. You're going to see this transformation from old self to new self in the ways we interact with each other. Like, for example, it says, "Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your anger." You know, talking about thief, no longer steal. Again, how we deal with other people. Okay? Then he comes to chapter 5, which again, there were no chapters when he wrote this. And he gives us a therefore, right? And what is the word therefore? Therefore, to tell us, here's a conclusion to what I've just been saying. He's just been saying, you take off your old self, you put on the new self. The new self is going to transform your relationships with each other. And then he says, therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children. And, focus on verse 2, walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us. So what does Paul say is the standard of love that defines what we show to other people? He says it's to the degree that you have been shown love by Christ. And by the way, he gave himself up for you. So when Jesus is in the upper room, he says, how are they going to know you? Because you're going to show them the same love that I show you. Paul says, how are you going to be imitators of God? You're going to reflect the love that Christ showed you, even to the degree that he was willing to give himself up for you. So again, Jesus, Paul, saying the exact same thing. And by the way, every time you see the word love, John 13, Ephesians 4, and every other passage we're going to look at this morning, it's some form of the word agape. In many cases, it's the form of agapao, but they all are coming from that root word agape. So let's think about, for just a second, what Jesus did for us. We know that he sacrificed himself for us. We know that, right? He gave up his life. He gave up his body. He died for us. So clearly there is a sacrifice of himself involved in the way in which he loved us. But I want to go even a step deeper than that. Go with me to Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26. This is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, which was in the Mount of Olives, on the Mount of Olives. This is after he had been with his disciples in the upper room. 26, go down to verse 36. It says, then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, that'd be James and John, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, to Peter and James and John, my soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me. And going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Now, when he's asking that the cup pass from him, what's he asking? Lord, don't let me have to die, right? Don't let me not have to do this. And in Mark's account, Mark records it as, remove this cup from me. In Luke's account, he says, if you're willing, remove this cup from me. And then in Luke's account, in Luke 22, when he comes back to pray again, it says, and being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling to the ground. He was so distressed, so sorrowful, so upset that he's sweating like drops of blood. But he says, Lord, please, please take this away from me so I don't have to do this. But he did it anyway. But what do I gather from him asking, Lord, take this from me? He didn't want to do it. At least the humanity of him did not want to do it. But guess what? He did it anyway, right? He did it anyway. So not only did he sacrifice his life and his body, he sacrificed what he wanted to do. He gave the priority to the one he loved over what his own desire, his own will was. Now again, that's the definition, I believe, of agape love. That's the lesson that my mom was teaching me when I was 16, 17 years old. Sometimes love means doing something even when you don't want to. And Jesus is the ultimate example of one who gave himself up even when the humanity in him did not want to. He didn't want to. Now, go with me to John, 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. And while you're turning there, the letter that we call 1 John is a letter written to defend the message of the gospel. And it's defending it against a type of false teaching which ultimately became known as Gnosticism. This was in its early form, but Gnosticism, we don't have time to go down that rabbit hole, but Gnosticism carries with it the idea that what we do in this life doesn't matter. What we do in our physical bodies doesn't matter. And so John is writing a lot about how not only does it matter, but what we do matters. And the love that we show for God and for others are really the true mark of what makes someone a follower of Christ. And so it's the opposite of saying that, that what we do in our body doesn't matter. It means everything. And if you go to 1 John chapter 3, in the midst of this whole conversation, where he's talking about loving God and loving our fellow man, he says in verse 16, he says, by this we know love. And again, that's the word agape. We know love. That he, who's he? Jesus, laid down his life for us. That's the love that we have been shown by him, by Jesus. He gave up his life even when he didn't want to. He gave it up for us. And then he says this, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. He says, if it comes to it, and you need, and it comes to a point where you know you need to lay down your life for a brother, you need to be willing to do that because Jesus was willing to do it for you. But you may, maybe that doesn't seem real, because clearly John was writing this, and at this point he had not given up his life. All of us that are here, we have not given up our lives for anyone else. So how do we apply that to, you know, situations where we're not being asked to give up our lives, but we're being asked to give up something else? Well, I think John addresses that in verse 17. He says, but if anyone has the world's goods, this is a real life illustration. If anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? He says, if you find yourself in a situation where you have the opportunity to sacrifice something that you have for the good of someone who doesn't have, and you don't do that, he says, how can you say that God's love is in him? How can that be an example of agape love? How can that be an example of sacrificial love? And you say, but I didn't want to. Well, sometimes we have to do something for others, even when we don't want to. Even when we don't want to. And he says in verse 18, little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth. And I go back to what my mom told me. Loving someone means doing things even when we don't want to. And I've thought about this a lot. It doesn't matter the relationship. That concept applies. It could be between husband and wife. It could be between children and parents or parents and children. It could be between co-workers or neighbors. Loving someone means doing things for them even when you don't want to. That is the essence of sacrificial agape love. And that's the lesson that didn't originate with her, but that I learned from my mother when I was a teenager. That Jesus told his disciples, this is the new commandment. You have to take the type of love that I have shown you and reflect it to others. And so on this Mother's Day, may we take a lesson that, again, didn't originate with her, but that I learned from my mother. And may we reflect on our relationships that we have with others and say, are we demonstrating love for our spouse, our children, our parents? Children, are you listening? Our parents. Our love for our co-workers, our neighbors, our brothers and sisters in Christ, in being willing to do something even if we don't want to. That even if I don't want to, that's probably not a good enough excuse to not do it. It's a simple lesson, hard to live out, hard to live out. But I hope that gives us an opportunity to evaluate again our own relationships that we have with others to say, am I showing love? Am I willing to do things for them even when I don't want to? How much better would our marriages be? How much better would we be as parents or as children, as brothers and sisters, as co-workers, as neighbors, if we live by that principle, that standard of love, the new commandment? If you're here this morning and you've never given your life to Christ, the outcome of that love that he showed for us is that he died so that we don't have to. And all he asked from us is to follow him rather than ourselves. And if you're here this morning and you've never made that decision to follow him, to accept the love that he has shown for us, then I encourage you to think about making that decision this morning. If you're here this morning and there's anything we can do for you, if you have anything you need us to pray for, encouragement that you need, you know that we have a loving group of brothers and sisters that would love to embrace you and help you in any way that we can. Please come while we sing our invitation song.